Welcome to Leo Roundtable at leoroundtable.com. My name is Chip DeBlock, and I'm your host, and we're a group of law enforcement professionals that talk about today's news and issues, but we do it from a law enforcement perspective. And you recognize him, Jeff Winninger, retired LAPD commander, retired as a lieutenant from the Los Angeles County Police Department, and Los Angeles City. Police Department. I said county, didn't I? I got your friend Ralph on the show, and he's already messing me up because he worked with the sheriff's office. So, but thanks for being on the show, Jeff. Appreciate it. We've also got our sponsors, guys. Our sponsors go to great lengths to make sure this program can come to you guys. And being on satellite radio, it is not cheap. So thank you so much to the Gauls at Gauls.com, our title sponsor, our satellite radio sponsor, Compliant Technologies at ComplianTechnologies.com, Arrow Precision USA, our arm sponsor. We have GunLearn.com on Medicare.live, SafeguardRecruiting.com, our streaming sponsor. And yes, thanks to them, we're streaming to over 1 million people right now. Also, TwoBells.com. They built a new online store at LeoRoundtable.com. More information about them and a giveaway in just a second. Also, FishOrlandoBass.com. And with Fish Orlando, you know, in Orlando, if you're going to Orlando with the wife and the kids or the grandkids or however you're going to get there, you have options. So if you want to do a bass fishing charter, you can hook up with Zach at FishOrlandoBass.com and go bass fishing, and it gets better. You also have the opportunity to go gator hunting, and I'm talking about the Florida alligators, and it is catch and relocate. So you're catching and releasing, but a lot of fun. And Zach is going to make sure that you get back home in one piece. So FishOrlandoBass.com. A shout out to Brian Burns for the Tampa Free Press at TampaFreePress.com. Thanks for carrying our content, Brian. Also, Ray Dietrich with FormerLawman.com and Travis Shades with LawOfficer.com. Thanks to all these entities for helping make this show happen. And now, what in the world are we talking about today? You know, real clear politics, and, you know, one of our Secret Service guys turned me onto this publication. They're talking about the presidential job approval ratings. You guys might be surprised. And there's a lot of things in the news right now, not least of which is, of course, you know, what's going on in the Middle East and with Israel and that war coming to a cease. And, of course, the Nobel Peace Prize went to somebody else. But, you know, it's almost like I wouldn't even want it now. I just, you know, it's almost like an insult, you know, getting the Nobel Peace Prize in my book. So anyhow, we'll be going over the presidential job approval ratings and how does that tie into law enforcement? I will tell you when we get there, but I think it's an interesting tie-in. Also, feds warn that up to 20 years in prison after Portland anarchist group, they call for mass laser attacks on aircraft. I so hope that if anybody does this crap, they get the full 20 years in jail on the federal law, crime anyhow. Then we've got the Second Amendment Foundation and the DOJ. They actually team up together to shut down a Louisiana court that wants the membership roster for a gun group. It's crazy. I can't believe. But yeah, you would never see the Biden DOJ do this, but Trump DOJ has jumped on the bandwagon. Then we got Portland officer puts a suspect And don't say it, a neck hold. Are you serious? And after a nearly 7 minute struggle over an officer's gun, interesting component, male and female officers involved in this. I would say that we observe different performance levels. We will be talking about that. Louisiana State Police released body cam from a deadly traffic stop that killed a guy named Brandon Nicholas. And we've also got Toronto police a police officer pleads guilty to assault and careless use of a firearm in a shooting that left the man injured. So, wow, this guy pled. And then body cam shows an Indianapolis police officer shooting a suspect who killed two people over a $40 dispute. And I think this next one, I'm going to hold on to it because we've got attorney Ken Affianco on tomorrow's show, and I think that he's going to eat this up. Washington State permanently blocks from criminalizing priest confidentiality of confession. When we covered that, when they were going to make it a crime if a priest didn't come forward, someone's in the confessional, and I'm not Catholic, but if someone is in the confessional doing their thing, and the priest doesn't come forward with the information, they have these serious criminal charge there in Washington State for these guys. And so they're going to be blocking, you know, prosecuting people for it. So look, we're talking about Portland and Washington State. So when I say it's kind of messed up, I think that that's all I have to do is get the location. You guys will get it from there. So if you're ready, Jeff, you ready to cover the first main story or two? All right. So the first one, real clear polling, actually, real clear. I thought it was politics, but realclearpolling.com. So these are the, they call it today in history, through October the 13th job approval rating. So we're going to start off. There's three approval ratings for three different presidents. And it is 45.3 is the top of the game. And then the other one just under that is 44.4. And then we've got one that is 39.5 sounds low when you consider the other ones being in the mid-40s, right? Trump is at the top. In 2025, it ended October the 13th. Through October the 13th, he's at 45.3 job approval rating, followed by Obama in 2013, the year I retired, 44.4. So that's almost 1 point. It's almost a full point below. And then we've got 39.5, and that is Bush back in 2005. So whenever I, you know, whenever I get in debates with people, which happens more and more since this show, I always find that you look at a lot of this. It's this infatuation with Trump and the hate that goes along with that. I can't say that I understand it. But what you have to understand, no matter what side of the fence you're on, is that now we can safely say that more than half of this country sides with President Trump. They elected him. He got the popular vote. Don't forget that, because Obama got it two terms in a row, right? So that's why, in my opinion, these arguments about systemic racism, they don't hold water, because we elected not just a black president twice and he got the popular vote, which means he got the majority, right? But he also was a black Muslim president. So all these these prejudices that people like to throw out there, I think that it negates it. And when you're considering Donald Trump, whether you like what he's doing or not, over half of the people in this country wanted him in the office that he's currently holding, because he said he was going to do exactly what he's doing right now. So the people are in the minority that are not approval. So we do have, I've started to see a trend for some of the vocality of this to be limited now. We've even got Hillary Clinton and some other people praising him for his effort to stop the war in the Middle East. And so we're seeing a tide here, a pendulum swing. I don't think it's going to be a full pendulum swing. I don't think that we'll get Rosie O'Donnell on the bandwagon on praising Trump. But that said, people that had formerly been critical and just huge critics are now on it. So whether you like them or not, you have to remember that the majority of the country wanted them in there. So when you're talking about groups like Antifa and some other stories we have coming down the pike, these people, when Trump's going after them and making these guys terrorist groups or listing these guys as terrorist groups, and we're talking about the drugs and the fentanyl coming over here, and he's going after China and people in Venezuela, you got to understand that this is what the country, this is why we elected him. And we got tired of the open borders and stuff and being lied to. So I think it makes for a good conversation. Jeff, what do you think?
Well, I'm actually, I opened up the graph that you emailed me. And I just find it interesting that whether you're Trump, Obama, or Bush, that from the time that they take office, that there's historically always a decline in their popularity. I'd also be curious kind of see what Clinton's looked like, also what Biden's looked like. It'd just be kind of interesting to compare to some, but I suspect it's the same. You know, that being said, I mean, it's really, you know, I think Trump won 49.8% of the popular vote, which was, I think Harris got like 48.3. So you're talking about a point and a half difference, which is really only 2,248,000 votes. Now, it was a landslide in the Electoral College, but you know, really what we are seeing in this country is a pretty divided down the middle attitude. And it was kind of interesting. I listened to a Joe Rogan, and he was all over Trump for the immigration stuff. Not getting rid of the violent criminals, but he was critical of how he's going after people that have been here for a decade or two and maybe here illegally, but, you know, haven't violated any laws and own homes and are paying their taxes. And I think Trump needs to be careful. All conservatives, I think, should be concerned, because he needs to be kind of reasonable in his approach. And he may lose some of these people that are in the middle that could be harmful in the midterms as well as in 2028. But, you know, those are just some interesting things. It was interesting what Joe Rogan had to say.
Are you referring mostly to the immigration issue as far as, I know that they're at least they're saying they're targeting the people that are the criminal offenders. I know that during, while they're going out there doing that, these other people come in the crosshairs. It's almost, you know, you can't avoid coming across other people that are going to be illegals that maybe are not the rapists and the murderers and stuff. But, you know, what do you do with them? Right. And they did commit crimes by coming over here illegally, but it's just, they've been here for a while. So.
Yeah. I mean, I guess Joe's point, I guess, was that he's like, you know, you want to be measured in everything you do. Cause I believe he thinks it's important that we don't lose people, you know, in his methods in which he's trying to accomplish his goals.
Great. All right, good commentary and good start. Commercial break, we'll be right back. All right, guys, it's time to talk about our title sponsor, Goals at Goals.com. And you know, as police officers, we all know we can buy our gear from a lot of different places. And especially when you consider going online, it's almost limitless. So here's what's important. I want to remind everybody about the importance of actually supporting the companies that support law enforcement. And I don't know of a company that does that better than Goals at Goals.com. And listen to this. Even their motto is proud to serve those who serve, which of course they do in spectacular fashion. And they walk the talk by supporting dozens of focused organizations like this radio show. So when you're looking for gear, please support our title sponsor by going to Goals at Goals.com. And we're not done. They're going to do you one better. For the loyal listeners of the show, they're going to give you a code where you get 15% off your next purchase. And that is Radio 15. So type in Radio 15 and it gets you 15% off. That is 15, Radio 15. At Goals.com, 15% off your next purchase. And they have gift cards. We give away a couple every week on the show. Hook up your family, friends, and loved ones with a new Goals gift card at Goals.com. They will be your new best friends. All right, guys, now it's time to talk about Compliant Technologies at ComplianTechnologies.com. And, you know, they are committed to providing non-lethal solutions to help officers gain the upper hand safely and rapidly in a humane, low-optics manner, utilizing their CD3, which stands for Conductive Distraction and De-escalation Technology. Their flagship product, we all know by now, it's called the Glove. It's helped officers tens of thousands of times with no injuries. And, yes, you heard that correctly. I said no injuries. The Glove has actually achieved non-lethal status in an arena that predominantly can only offer less lethal results. When it comes to weapons retention, transitioning to a sidearm or a conductive energy weapon, the Glove at ComplianTechnologies.com, they virtually eliminated weapons confusion. So stay ahead of the game with Compliant Technologies and the revolutionary CD3 that hundreds of agencies have already turned to nationwide. And friends, take it from me, when it comes to safety, this is one of the most common sense, hands-on solutions has ever come along. So go to ComplianTechnologies.com today and tell them that Chip sent you. Again, that is ComplianTechnologies.com. You'll be glad you did. And they've also got those cool videos. Welcome back. Leo Roundtable at LeoRoundtable.com, the law enforcement talk show. My name is Chip the Block, and I'm your host. We're joined by former LAPD commander, Lieutenant Jeff Weninger, as well, author of, if I hadn't mentioned it before, I'll mention it now, On Thin Ice. More information on his new book at OnThinIceBook.com. We've been talking about presidential polling and the favorability, and Jeff actually did some digging on the poll and stuff. And we were just kind of correlating that to law enforcement. And even though, yeah, Trump did get the popular vote, Jeff is, I have to agree with Jeff. This country has been split pretty much, it appears, down the middle for a while. I mean, you know, you've got almost as many people on one side of the fence as on the other. I think there's some issues that we kind of, you know, that kind of we blend in on, but there's enough severe ones that we absolutely don't. So
I just think it's important that the fringes of each party not control the policies. I think this country is really looking for somebody that's going to use some logic and some reason and try to bring people together. Because truth be told, we really have more in common than we have as far as differences. And it's about navigating a path forward. And, you know, I think we can get there. Right now there's things that are occurring that make people question that, but you know, we're Americans and we're a resilient country, and we've overcome a lot worse scenarios than what we have now. And there's a lot on our plate as a country, but I think by and large we're addressing things in an appropriate way. That doesn't mean that there's not areas that we can improve upon, but you know, that being said, you know, it's just important that people are patient and, you know, not look at things from a self-serving perspective, trying to find things that support their narrative that they want to expound, but actually look at things objectively and see what the data really suggests. And that's really what's important.
Agreed. You know, before the show, I was actually watching the news and watching some of the the Israelis who had been released by Hamas coming home. And I'll tell you, how can you not watch that and not just like get goosebumps or maybe tear up a little bit? Just the emotions that these people are showing on TV, and they haven't seen their loved ones in 2 years. They didn't even know who was alive and who was dead. They just are watching TVs and videos to see if one of their loved ones is in the small group of people that's being released. What do they have? Like, is it 20 people that are alive? And then there's quite a number of people who are deceased that they're going to be getting the bodies and stuff. But man, horrible situation, but the people coming home finally and this thing ending, you can only imagine the emotions, the range of emotions these people are going through right now. Like I said, every time I wake up and see the news cycle, there's so much good that's going on in a world where there's so much bad going on, I guess is where I'm going. So, you ready to cover? We got another one here about the Portland and anarchist groups. If you can possibly believe there's anarchist groups in Portland, I know that probably shocks you, Jeff, but the Tampa Free Press at TampaFP.com and Red Voice Media at RVMnews.com. So the feds are warning up to 20 years in prison. And that actually, I got to admit, that kind of surprised me a little bit. 20 years in prison after Portland anarchist group calls for mass laser attacks on aircraft. Well, I guess, you know, especially if it's an organized effort. I mean, I tell you, the people that are trying to organize, it's almost like inciting a riot, right? I would be going for the people that are running the website, but the people that are definitely posting stuff like this and getting away with it. The Trump administration has issued a stern warning of up to 20 years in federal prison for anyone who shines lasers at aircraft, a threat that comes just a day after an anarchist website encouraged a mass laser attack on law enforcement helicopters this past Saturday. Now, the FBI, their office in Portland, they used a Twitter post on Thursday. They detailed the severe penalties that are involved, a clear response to a blog post by a leftist website that urged locals to, quote, fill the skies with lasers, unquote, aimed at federal helicopters. And according to the FBI, those who engage in this activity, they could face charges of aiming a laser pointer at an aircraft, which carries up to 5 years in prison, or even destruction of an aircraft or aircraft facilities, which can result in a 20-year sentence. Wow. And the blog site, and you know, I'm not even really going to mention the blog site name. It'll be in the article if people want to look at it that comes out, you know, tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock on a Rumble page. But the post explicitly states that the goal is to impair pilots' vision and to force the aircraft to land. And of course, that's if they get lucky, if they don't crash. And they go on to say that if enough lasers are pointed at the aircraft, we think that they will not be able to safely stay in the air for long enough to continue to pinpoint the source for law enforcement. In other words, they won't get caught. But it's these guys posting that are saying that, not the people that are trying to get to point the lasers. The authors added that the large number of participants would make it difficult to focus on a single person. The blog also offered instructions on how to evade capture, be ready to dispose of the laser, wear gloves, clean it with alcohol, don't leave your DNA. If you won't take, anyhow, it says it won't take many of us to ground the helicopters, is what the post said. And it just goes on to say that the DHS also noted that this website, whose name I'm not going to say, it's one of several doxing websites that have previously revealed the names and home addresses of immigration agents in Oregon. So these people are trash from the word go. Jeff?
Yeah, I mean, I find this rather disturbing. You know, anybody that knows anything about aviation, to have lasers shined whether it's a helicopter or a plane or whatever, can have tragic results. The reality is, I really hope that we're going above and beyond just sharing what the potential legal ramifications could be. I would hope that we're using some open source intelligence to try to identify specifically who these people are and reaching out. I am certain there's got to be something on the books where posting something like this could be perceived or fit into the criteria and the elements of conspiracy or what have you, because there is this type of stuff is absolutely irresponsible. And the reality is, yes, I support a First Amendment right. In this country, you have the ability to to share your positions on controversial issues. And, you know, law enforcement, by and large, will help facilitate those First Amendment rights. But it doesn't give you the right to threaten or try to encourage people to do something that could result in someone's death.
Great. Our next commercial break, guys, stick with us. We'll be right back. All right, guys, introducing Arrow Defense by Arrow Precision at arrowprecisionusa.com, a beacon of durability, dependability, and all-American craftsmanship in the realm of duty rifles. And yes, we're talking about long guns. They're born from an aerospace engineering company, so you know these guys know what they're doing. And Arrow Defense by Arrow Precision demands perfection, because selling for anything less is not an option when your life is on the line. Visit arrowprecisionusa.com for a lineup that matches every discipline, because they basically have something for everybody. And you know, back since 1994, they've been quietly leading the AR builder parts domain, but now they're making waves in the complete rifle arena with soulless bolt actions. And that's not all. Their M4E1 Pro and Mod 4 handguards, they hit the market last year at arrowprecisionusa.com. The embodiments of duty rifle excellence now being tailored for the civilian customer. And that means that now you can start getting your hands on this primo stuff. And their M5 AR-308 platform, nothing short of spectacular. So don't settle for less when you can have the best. Head over to arrowprecisionusa.com. Again, that's arrowprecisionusa.com. Welcome back. Leo Roundtable at leoroundtable.com, the law enforcement talk show. My name is Chip DeBlock, and I'm your host. We're joined by former LAPD Commander Lieutenant Jeff Wininger, author of the new book, On Thin Ice, at onthinicebook.com. We've been talking about lasers, Jeff, and about this these groups in Washington State and the Portland area that are threatening to take down federal aircraft with these laser pointers, trying to do it with a show of force, so that there's so many of them that they can't be captured and stuff. You better believe now. I mean, now we've got the intelligence, right? We know what they're planning on doing. You got to believe there's guys, you know, infiltrating these groups and just want to be there. There's little doubt in my mind that we're going to see some bad guys going to jail on this thing, and hope, and I pray that we don't have any aircraft that go down, or that pilots get any permanent damage in vision. I know that we're holding another story with a Louisiana court coming up, but any final words on that last story with the laser pointers?
No, I just hope people have enough sense to not engage in that kind of activity.
Yeah,
be foolish, and if they do, then they have nothing. They can't complain about the consequences that are coming.
Well, this next story, Dan O'Kelly is on the stream right now. I tell you, I would so love to have Dan on the show talking about this. Hint, hint. And Dan, if you text me, I will send you the link to the show. But or you can type in, and most people can see what you're typing, I think. But at TampaFP.com. So we got the Second Amendment Foundation and the DOJ. We're talking about the Trump DOJ. They actually team up together, and this is a gun issue. They're shutting down a Louisiana court order for a gun group's membership roster. Now, I was in the gun unit at Tampa, and there are federal protections from keeping the government from getting a hold of the list of gun owners. This just goes beyond everything. I can't say I'm surprised, because we've been worried about the Biden DOJ and other liberal groups that have sought to do stuff like this. There's even stuff in California that's been very scary. But the Second Amendment Foundation, in a coordinated move with the Department of Justice, believe it or not, they filed a motion to amend a Louisiana district court's judgment that mandated that the organization hand over its membership list as part of a ruling in the case of Reese versus ATF, if you can believe that. So it doesn't happen a lot, but yeah, the DOJ is working hand in hand right now. So you gotta love that part of it. And I'm just making sure that's not Dan O'Kelly, you know, paging me right now. And it goes on to say the underlying lawsuit, it challenges a federal law prohibiting licensed firearm dealers from selling or transferring handguns to adults under the age of 21. Now, earlier in the week, the court entered a judgment that contained an unexpected directive, and it said, quote, within 21 days of issuance of this judgment, those plaintiffs shall provide to defendants a verified list of their members as of November the 6th, 2020. The order directly targeted the SAF, which, of course, is the Second Amendment Foundation, and one of the organizational plaintiffs in the case. It attacked both. Now, the SAF executive director, Adam Kraut, stated that the organization's immediate response was, once we read the judge's order, We took quick and decisive action to ensure that our member data would not be supplied to anyone, much less the government. He stressed that the organization's firm stance, asserting that they have never and will never provide the government a list of their members, and that they will they won't be strong-armed in the turning over private data of those who support the Second Amendment Foundation. And the partnership with the DOJ in filing this particular motion to amend, it's a significant development according to the story, which I agree with, as the DOJ is typically the defendant representing the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms and Explosives, ATF, and Crowd expressed gratitude that the DOJ agreed with their position and they actually joined the motion. So another really warm, feel-good story. What do you think about this one, Jeff?
I find it a little peculiar. I'd be interested in what the actual court's rationale for making that requirement to be. It's kind of, because it seems like there's more than one entity involved in the lawsuit, and to single out this one SAF, that in and of itself doesn't sound appropriate. I can understand the desire to remain, you know, confidential in regards to your membership and all of that, but absent having some idea of what the rationale from it would be for having that requirement, it's hard to comment on it. But I'd be hard pressed to find something that I think is legitimate, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. I can't wrap my head around it. So.
Yeah, I agree. And the data they were looking for, they wanted the member list from November the 6th of 2020. So that's a dated, I mean, look, there's still a huge issue with it because those guys have still got guns, right? But I know there was a purpose in the judge's mind on thinking, he just wasn't thinking, you know, I don't care what the rationale was, that is prohibited. And I'm so glad that we've got the current DOJ in place and that Pam Bondi's not gonna let that happen. So anyhow, wow. If you're ready, we've got some stories for video components, and we may spend a little time talking about some of these. We've got roughly 5 minutes before we take our next commercial break. We're going to need it. Let me just say this real quick, that you are on the show today. Obviously, you know that because you're here, Jeff, but every time you're on the show, we do a Two Bells giveaway. So are we still good for one today?
Absolutely. You bet.
All right. So people that are watching the stream, if you are able to type in the number 2 and the letter B for Bell and give us your email address, you'll be up to win a $20 gift card code for use at our online store at leoroundtable.com. So Two Bells built the new online store for us. We got cool gear, and the first $20 is on them. So if you want to win that $20 gift card code, type in the number 2, the letter B for Bell. We need your email address so that I can email you the code at the end of the show. And it's just a great opportunity if you have not won that contest in the last 90 days. So that's key. So I'll be watching for the entrance on that. And it's a great opportunity, guys. So moving along, and we got some stories with video components. And I always say, you know, we don't really show live videos on a live show. There's just too many things that can go wrong. And look, a lot of our listeners are radio and podcast anyhow without the video component. So if you really want to see a video that we happen to talk about, and we will describe in great detail, so you may not feel the need to, but if you need to see one, all you have to do is watch our show the very next day. And that is at 9 o'clock in the morning. Producer will release a copy of the live show from the day before, but he'll embed every video that we talk about as we talk about it. Pictures of the good guys and bad guys will pop up as well. It's a great way to watch the show. So even though our live show is during the lunch hour, Monday through Friday from 12 to 1 o'clock Eastern time, Tuesday through Saturday at 9 o'clock in the morning, the produced version with all these videos and pictures, that gets released on a Rumble channel called Leo Roundtable. So in this story from, and I got the story from rumble.com, and it's called, the channel is This Is Butter, our favorite law enforcement video channel. We have a Portland officer puts a suspect in a neck hold after nearly a 7-minute struggle over an officer's gun, but there's two cops.
The suspect, 43-year-old Bo Davis, emerged from the bathroom holding the red metal pole. Officer Randall signaled to Officer Babison to help him take the man into custody. The suspect resisted the officers.
For what? I understand. I'm not racist. I am. But what for? Why are you doing it? I didn't do nothing. No, I didn't.
Hey.
You have to tell me why.
Okay. Relax.
Why? Give me a fucking office.
Let go of my gun.
After about 25 seconds, Davis can be seen grabbing Officer Randall's holstered sidearm. During the struggle, Officer Randall's body-worn camera was knocked off his uniform and landed on the ground face up.
You're touching me! Touch me! Stop touching me! Why are you touching me?
No, I'm asking you! Fight him!
The struggle went to the ground. Davis got on top of Officer Randall, who was on his back. Officer Babison ordered him to get off the officer and delivered focused strikes to the suspect's back.
Stop it! Get off! Get off! Get off!
Get off!
Officer Randall told Officer Babison to use her taser, and she attempted to deploy it. However, it did not appear to be effective.
No, I'm not gonna get tased!
Stop!
Stop! You're gonna get tased!
Why not doing it?
You're gonna get tased!
Davis's hands then went to Officer Randall's throat. Officer Babison struck Davis in the back of the head with the plastic handle of the taser. That was also ineffective, and Davis again dove toward Officer Randall's pistol. 10:32 a.m., the first cover officer arrived and assisted with handcuffing Davis.
Stop it!
Stop hurting me!
Put your hand behind your back.
I am.
According to the body-worn camera time codes, the struggle lasted 4 minutes, 32 seconds. Both officers were treated at the hospital, released, and are recovering from injuries. Davis was treated at the hospital and booked into jail on charges that include a...
And I did mention earlier about performance levels on this thing. So we're in Portland, Oregon. A man faces multiple charges, including attempted murder, after he attempted to take a Portland police officer's gun during a struggle that put two officers in the hospital on Saturday morning. It doesn't say it in the first paragraph, but he also choked the male officer too. So the male officer was on the receiving end of the bad guy trying to take his gun and to choke him. So you may be wondering what the female officer was doing this time. I will tell you. So the suspect is 43-year-old Bo W. Davis of Portland, initially taken to the hospital after the nearly 7-minute skirmish. He tried to take an officer's gun with the officer eventually putting him in a neck hold that ended the altercation. So it kind of implies in that paragraph that the officer whose gun was being taken or tried to be taken was the same guy that put him in the neck hold. But according to the article, it was the female, from what I read, that actually put him in the neck hold. Now, it says that the bad guy, Davis, was released from the hospital and he was booked. He faces charges of attempted murder, first-degree robbery, assaulting a public safety officer, menacing, and an outstanding warrant. Now, both officers were taken to the hospital. One had a hand injury. The other one had a head injury. And the injured officers there at home recovering. So they initially did not release the names of the officers, but then they finally did. So it's Officer David Randall, that's the male officer, and Melissa Babasson, that is the female. And they say that the one that used the neck hold, and also she's been placed on paid administrative leave because the agency determines the carotid restraint or neck hold as lethal force. And they treat it as such. They put them on paid admin leave and they do a big investigation. Now, it says also police check the neighborhood, but they get a call. They look for the suspect, can't find him. 20 minutes later, they find the guy in Oregon Park, and he's in a bathroom. He's in a stall. And so he comes out. When the officers are asking for him to come out, they think he might be in there, and they go hands-on, and the fight is on almost immediately. So I'm going to go to my show notes here because I think they're a little bit more accurate. So they go hands-on. Guy starts fighting about the 57-second mark. The female officer seems to disengage from the fight while her male partner continues the fight. And according to my notes, at the one-minute mark, the suspect can clearly be seen grabbing the male officer's holstered pistol. The article says that they notified radio that the guy was going for the gun. And that's the point in time where I would, like, ready, you know, take action. Don't get on the radio. But I get a lot of questions. And it says that went on for about 25 seconds trying to grab the gun. And it looks like we're going to have to go to the commercial break before I finish. The male officer's body cam gets knocked to the ground. And at that time, they go strictly to the female officer's body cam. But guys, I'm going to go and take a break here for a second. We got a commercial break coming up. The story's about to get really, really good. Stick with us. We'll be right back. All right, guys, it's time to talk about GunLearn at GunLearn.com. Daniel Kelly is on the stream as well. And, you know, as law enforcement officers, we deal with guns every day, but it's what we don't know about them that gets us in the trouble. Injuries, civil lawsuits, accidental discharges, misidentifications, lost prosecutions, and also disciplinary issues. But GunLearn.com, they have your back. You can quickly become extremely firearm knowledgeable by simply learning 14 training modules from the convenience of your home or your office, or by attending a live seminar at GunLearn.com. You can also become a safe, accurate, and competent certified firearm specialist like our very own Captain Brett Bartlett and also attorney Ken Apianko. Now, the course has had huge success in raising the bar of firearm knowledge, and GunLearn has been a trusted source since way back in 2011 by gun manufacturers, federal agencies, forensic organizations, and police departments nationwide. Now, the founder, Dan O'Kelly, has a deal for you if you have your own agency, or if you're command staff, a chief, or a sheriff, you can host a seminar for absolutely no cost. Go to GunLearn.com to get more information. Welcome back. Leo Roundtable at LeoRoundtable.com, the law enforcement talk show. My name is Chip the Block, and I'm your host. We're joined by former LAPD commander and co-host Jeff Weninger. He retired as a lieutenant, also authored a book called On Thin Ice at OnThinIceBook.com. And wow, we just got into talking about a story, and yeah, we're not even there yet. We're not done. It's a story with a video component. A Portland police officer puts a suspect in a neck hold after nearly a 7-minute struggle over an officer's gun, and there's a lot to unpack here, guys. And so where I left off was that we have a bad guy that the cops are looking for. And we've got a male and a female officer. They go to a park, and the bad guy is inside of a bathroom stall. He comes out. They go hands on, and he had been he had a red pole, metal pole. He'd been smashing some cars with it and stuff, and he still had that on him. So they grab him. The fight goes down almost immediately. At one point, and look, from my perspective, Jeff and I haven't really talked in great detail about this before the show. But I think it's fairly safe to argue that at about the 57-second mark, the female disengages from the fight, and we're watching. We have a dual feed: the male officer's body cam and the female officer's body cam, until the male officer loses the body cam, and then the video goes strictly to hers. And so she's watching a lot of the fight going on, and her male partner. There's a point where the bad guy grabs his gun. It's a holster, and the bad guy's grabbing onto it, though. And that reportedly happens for about 25 seconds. The bad guy spends 25 seconds trying to get this cop's gun out of the holster. And the female is not hands-on then. She's away, because we've got a beautiful video of it feed from her body cam. The male officer's body cam gets knocked to the ground. Now we're on the female's body cam. The bad guy's pants, for some reason, fall down to his ankles, and his shirt gets pulled over his head like a hockey player, Jeff. That's where you come in, you know. That's what it reminded me. And then the guy's wearing black briefs. At the 1 minute and 25-second mark, the two males, the bad guy and the male police officer, they go to the ground. And so the cop lands on his back. The bad guy's on top of him. And the female officer is patting the bad guy's back, basically, with her gloved hands. Sometimes the hands are open, sometimes they're closed, but she's basically, you know, knocking him like a pat. I mean, it wasn't an effective strike, because it really wasn't even a strike. And no impact weapon. And so I immediately am wondering about, you know, all the tools that we carry, you know, no impact weapon. And then she pulls a taser out, but she does that from a distance. And so she's up close and personal, decides not to do a drive stun, which is a contact stun from the taser. So she does a taser, deploys the probes from distance. They're not effective. And at 2 minutes and 5 seconds, now the suspect starts choking her male partner, who's still on his back. And she runs up and hits him in the back of the head with the plastic handle of the taser. No result. And then the suspect goes for the male officer's holstered firearm again. And the female officer, it says that she goes hands on, but just open hands to the suspect's back again. Her body cam, she's so close to him, her body cam, she's turning it on and off, it cycles on and off a couple times. And then you hear the male officer on body cam yelling for this guy to let go of his gun. And at 2 minutes and 57 seconds, we have backup starting to arrive, and then they end up going 10-15 with the guy. The fight lasted 4 minutes and 32 seconds. And you don't really see it in the video, but the article does say that the bad guy was put in a neck restraint which helped the fight end, or at least contained it enough. They say that it was the female officer, but there was one point where one paragraph implied that maybe it was the male officer. So I can't say with 100% certainty that it was the female, but most of the writing leads to the female doing the neck restraint anyhow. So that's the way this thing ends. A lot to unpack. We got a little over 5 minutes. Jeff Weininger.
Well, this is really, it's about mindset, it's about competency, and it's about conditioning. Not just physical conditioning, but conditioning of your mind. And that means that you have to run these scenarios through your head before you're even faced with them. But the reality is, if you look at the data, like 25% of law enforcement officers in this country, they're not trained in any defensive tactics. 25%. And it looks as if Portland's not training their officers in this, because the number of times throughout this scenario, there were levels of force that would have been absolutely appropriate to use, but weren't. And whether it was the male or the female officer, I saw inconsistencies in their ability to handle this level of physical assault upon their person. When I'm talking about the male officer, when he's grappling, he's down on the ground, I didn't see anything that's consistent with the training that I have received relative to Brazilian jiu-jitsu type techniques that you used when someone's on top of you in order to get the upper hand on them. It just didn't appear that they were trained. And if they have been trained, then there's a lack of ensuring that they remain competent in those techniques, because I didn't see anything from either of these officers relative to their ability to successfully handle this guy under the circumstance. We had a deadly force scenario where the officer's gun, at a minimum of two circumstances or incidents, when we were watching the video, the suspect clearly had his hand in control of that weapon. And if he had been able to get it out of the holster, this whole thing would have been ugly. And I wasn't confident that the female officer had the mindset and even actually was properly assessing the situation and knew what level of force she could actually use. And if she did, in fact, use the carotid restraint control hold or upper body control hold or choke hold, whatever they call it there, it certainly wasn't applied properly, because if it is, they're out in within seconds, and then it looks very different because they lose consciousness and you're able to cuff them up without any type of resistance. So it was concerning. It was hard to watch, but unfortunately, this is seen too often in law enforcement, where officers have demonstrated that they're not proficient in the techniques that need to be mastered in order to remain safe on the job. And you know, it's, people will say, well, the department doesn't train us. Well, you have responsibility as a police officer that when you take that oath, that you're going to remain in physical condition as well as maintain your competency in all of these defensive tactics type things. And you go to your Brazilian jiu-jitsu gyms and you get all this extra training on your own. You ensure that you're proficient and you can handle yourself. But I just didn't see it in the circumstance, and they were actually lucky.
Yeah, I the female should be pulled off the street. I don't know if she's got the capability. I don't know if it's just a training issue with her, or she even has the capacity to do the job, to be honest with you. I mean, with what I saw, and even the panic from the voice and stuff, but just the, I'd like to see what she had on her gun belt. I know she had a firearm, and there certainly was justification to have used that at certain points. Backing away with a taser, and you're right there in the fight with a drive stun opportunity, and now you're relying on probes to make contact, and of course it doesn't happen. Drive stun's going to work. Yeah, just so many issues that, you know, that I have. I'm in total agreement with you, but it, you know, it's just so, and the guy, you know, now the only thing I might disagree, Jeff, on is that with being a defensive tactics instructor, not all agencies are the same. So we did not want people to go through and get their own training, because we only wanted them to use what we taught them. And so there was a liability issue with if they're going to go do a takedown, or let's just say they called it a choke or whatever. You know, we did that carotid restraint technique for a while until it was outlawed. But we didn't want people using techniques that we didn't teach them, because now we're in a position where we have to defend them on court for something that we didn't teach them. But there are agencies that don't really have defensive tactics training. And we selected, we were very selective over which takedowns, armbars, pressure points that we taught. We never punch, unless it was a lethal force situation. We never, we call it our dominant hand. We don't like to use the word strong hand, but we never punch somebody with our weapon hand. We only did a reaction punch because we want to make sure those bones aren't broken so we can go to the gun and stuff like that. So, the training, the lack of training and just the ability, it was just so scary. And you're so right. It's not just the female officer, the male officer as well. And at that point, someone goes for my gun. I want to create distance and I'm going to be drawing my gun because I don't want to fight over it. And if he approaches me, he's going to get shot. But, while we're coming up to the end of the show, any final words on this before we wind it down? And you're right. There's so much to unpack on this, but both of these need to go back to the academy for some remedial. The female officer, I would have a hard time keeping her employed if I was wearing the agency, the head hat on this one. So.
Well, you make a great point. The reality is law enforcement is a very challenging career and it's not for everybody. And
oh, you're right. There's no shame in that.
Yeah, there isn't. You know, and it's and you can get through your entire career and perhaps you'll never be confronted with a scenario that you'll be exposed. But the reality is in the event that something happens, you need to earn your paycheck.
All right. Well, thank you, Jeff Wininger, also author of On Thin Ice at onthinicebook.com. I want to mention The Wounded Blue. A shout out to Gauls.com, ComplianceTechnologies.com, AeroPrecisionUSA.com, GunLearn, MyMedicare, Safeguard Recruiting, Two Bells, and FishOrlandoBass.com. We'll see you guys back tomorrow, 12 noon Eastern.